This program is intended for mature audiences only.
The following episode is brought to you in honor of Halloween.
Hello, my name is Madam Eileen.
Hi, my name is Macy. I'm from Georgia.
Well, my name is Billy Bob, and what I do is I drive down the road and you know, every time I see pretty ladies, I think, I'm gonna get some of that.
Well, honey, I'm so pleased to meet you this morning. I'm just so glad to be here. It has been wonderful getting to know you, and I am just so glad that we're going to spread this word together today.
Those were the voices of four people I live with. Before you jump to conclusions about the type of people I live with, let me say that those were not their real voices, nor their everyday personalities. They're acting. Kind of. I say kind of because while the roles are made up, each person is embodying traits that are actually a part of them. I've watched my friends and their characters evolve with, I confess, a bit of envy. In the role playing, I could sense freedom. In a really fun way, they were playing with parts of themselves they had otherwise shunned or ignored. From One Taste Urban Retreat Center in San Francisco, we bring you A Taste of Sex Reality Audio, a podcast featuring personal stories and perspectives from people engaged in the conscious exploration of sensuality, connection, and relationship. On this episode, we'll hear from Yia, Allegra, Ken, and Beth, four people who took on roles with characteristics they had rejected in themselves, and how that role-playing changed them forever. I'm Judy Silber. Stay tuned.
Hello, my name is Madam Eileen. I live and work in San Francisco, and I own the beautiful parlor with the many beautiful girls and the many beautiful boys. People come to my parlor for a pleasurable time. We give the best strokey-strokey and the best play for all the many men and the many women out there who are lonely and who are looking for the good time.
Madam Miley is my friend Yia. This is her talking about the shame she felt growing up as an Asian American.
There's so many jokes that are cracked about Asians all the time. And so growing up, there was a part of me that always contracted around that. Like, I hate it when non-Asians make fun of Asian Americans. And there's this part of me that also is ashamed of the accents of, like, the older women or, like, the stereotypes of Asian women being very erotic and, you know, knowing how to give good heads and stuff. So I've always somehow pushed that down. About a year and a half ago during Halloween, I was trying to find an outfit for this Halloween party that was happening at One Taste. And I went through my collection of clothes and I found this like black see-through Mandarin dress. And I just thought, okay, I'll just put that on.
What was your dress like?
Oh, it was just like black sheer like Mandarin collar dress from like that's covered from like neck all the way down to my ankles, but it's slit. Like there's like two slits on the side, and it's a see-through sheer fabric with like floral prints. And when I was wearing it, I just like slicked my hair to the side. You know, I did like the red lipstick with like the makeup and everything. The shoes I had on, these like black stiletto shoes, and it was just perfect. And I remember looking at myself in the mirror, and I swear to God, like not recognizing myself. Because I've never actually looked this way before. And I just thought, whoa, this is so weird. So I just connected with myself in the mirror. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I said hello to this person. And this voice just came out of me in this accent. Hello, my name is Madam Miley. How are you doing?
So when this character started to emerge, how did you feel?
I was happy that it came out. And after it did emerge, it had me look at why it felt so good. Like, why didn't I feel bad about it? And so it had me reflected on, like, my mom, you know, with her accent, and had me reflected on other elderly Asians that I grew up with who had accents and who couldn't speak English very well, or, like, just my cousins who came overseas and didn't have the proper English. And it had me really just look at that part of myself and had me laugh at it as opposed to being offended by it.
Did you find that you had less shame after Madame Miley emerged on that Halloween night?
Yeah, less shame, and I just learned how to play with it. I just learned how to play with it and have fun with it. People are taught to be miserable, and they don't know how to have the pleasure, and they think that having the pleasure is bad. So everything is all about the strokey-strokey. You have the strokey-strokey, you have the good sex, and everything is all good. That's why the makeup sex is so good. If you want to in your life, just break up every day and have the best sex ever. And it's funny, like, when I'm mad at Miley, like, it just comes out. You know, I don't think about what I'm going to say. And the funny thing is, though, is too, is that I can say, like, the cruelest things to people and the most honest and raw things to people. But because it's embodied by this person, like, there's no charge in there. So people don't get offended. It's more funny, really. See, for the man, you have to understand that when the woman is fighting with you, it's because she wants you to take her. She just wants the sex, and she don't know how to say it. So if you just take her to the bedroom and just throw her on the bed, she would like it, even though she's going to fight. But you take her to the bedroom, you give her the strokey-strokey, and she'd be the happy. That's all it is.
It's interesting, too, because Madame Miley is a racy character.
Yeah.
And she's very explicit about mm-hmm. sexual matters.
Right.
So, do you feel like you were combining different aspects of yourself?
Yes, I am. Because I also have a very sensual part. Like, I'm very open with my sexuality. So, that has also allowed my sexuality to come out and play, you know, in this more, like, just fun sort of way. And then I also have a dominant personality. So, it allows the dominant personality in me to also just come out and play and have fun. So it is a fusion of all these parts of me.
This is the second time in the time that I've known you, which is about 3 years?
Three and a half years.
Mm-hmm. That you've reclaimed part of your Asian heritage. Mm-hmm. The first time was when you reclaimed your birth name.
Yeah.
Can you talk about the reclaiming of your birth name and perhaps how these two merged together, mm-hmm. Madame Miley?
I remember growing up, and because my name is Yia, and it's spelled Y-I-A, and so teachers and substitute teachers would always butcher my name. Like, they would not be able to say it. And so I just became ashamed of that. So in elementary school, like, my friends and I, we started changing names and started adopting American names. So I went through Barbara, Heather, Jamie. I mean, they're horrible names. And so Jamie stuck for a while, and then it switched over to Vicky in seventh grade. Everyone just called me Vicky. My family calls me Vicky. I wasn't even thinking about changing it until one night at InGroup, there was a question that went around.
InGroup being the event that we hold here at One Taste every Wednesday mm-hmm. night, where it's a group communication game.
I'm so grateful for that InGroup because it actually had me claim this part of myself. Because I remember that night the question was, what's one thing about you nobody knows? And mine was, one thing no one knows is that Vicky is not my real name. That night or the following night, I just started writing about what my real name was and the shame that I had around it and why I never really used it. The name in Hmong, if you were to say it in Hmong, is Yia. So it's actually a really soft sound. And what it means is strength, something that's durable and strong. So you can bend it, but you can't break it. And so the interesting thing, too, was that once I started using it, like, the softer side of me started coming out. You know, it was more like the softer side that I had when I was a child. Like, that kind of tenderness came out.
What is it that you think has allowed this part of your past or this part of your culture to emerge in such a way that you can now be proud rather than feel shame?
I'm reclaiming it because it's like really recognizing myself as a whole and perfect being, you know, and there are things about my heritage that people don't understand. And I start seeing that more as a gift to educate people as opposed to like a nuisance or something.
Can we say goodbye to Madame Miley?
Yes. You want to say goodbye to the Madame Miley?
Any last words, Madame Miley?
Oh, yes. Oh, I want to tell the whole world that the pleasure, okay? You have to remember the pleasure. It's the okay for you to feel the pleasurable. You do not have to live a life so miserable. And if you are feeling miserable, you come to me, okay? Look for the me. I am Madam Miley. You can come to my parlor and we can give you the strokey strokey and how you feel the very good. There is no shame, okay? Shame, there is no shame in my parlor.
Thank you, Madam Miley. Thank you, yeah.
Thank you.
Madam Miley, as were several of the characters featured on today's show, was born a year ago Halloween. Personally, I have a love-hate relationship with the holiday. First of all, since dressing up closely resembles acting, it makes me uncomfortable. For most of my life, I've been a straightforward kind of girl. Insecure because I don't like to do anything unless I can do it well. So I shunned acting, which of course meant that it was really something that I wanted to do. Still, I've had great Halloweens where I found the perfect costume, meaning something reasonably clever and funny. And then there were Halloweens where I couldn't think of anything, so I just told everyone that I don't like to dress up and leave me alone, thank you very much. Last Halloween was one of those leave me alone years. Nearly everyone else had a costume except me. But then my nemesis, Nicole Halpern, whom I hated at the time, showed up at the One Taste Halloween party as me, wearing a brown wig, my skirt stuffed a little in the back to accentuate the behind, my favorite green fleece, and saying, "No, no, no," known to be my favorite phrase. So I donned a blonde wig, high heels, a dress of hers, and put her phone to my ear, which is exactly where hers always is. All night we bantered back and forth, as each other. It was surprisingly easy. I had watched her so carefully for so long that I knew exactly how to be her, especially in response to me. That night ended up being a reunion night for Nicole and me. We've had several of those in the 4 years of our relationship. We can't stand each other, and then all of a sudden the dam breaks and we're back in connection, best friends again. In this case, it was just too hard to hate each other after we had been each other. I think that's how it goes. As soon as you embrace a part of yourself, as soon as you stop blocking it, you can't hate it anymore. And what better way to own a part of yourself than to be it? And see what it has to say. This is our exploration today. Next, we have Allegra as Macy.
Hi, my name's Macy. Right now, I'm married. I got 2 kids and lots of friends and go to the mall and, you know, that's pretty good.
Is it okay if we talk about your character?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Allegra, where did Macy come from?
So, my dad grew up in Louisiana. So, parts of it are from his life. And parts of it are just, you know, from his stories when I was growing up. And I grew up in New York City. I was born there. So he moved up there. But then it's his lineage. So not only is it kind of him making fun of himself, but then whenever we would go visit my family, you know, we would all have our reunions in Louisiana. So it was just around half of my family being like from New York and very sophisticated, and then the other half being humongous and from Louisiana. And it was just like this totally different part of my life. I mean, I grew up next to the Empire State Building. Like, I don't know what it's like to be in a place where the tallest building around is the church. Like, I'm not that. So the really interesting piece is, like, being that. You know, it's like bringing that into who I am.
When did Macy emerge?
So my friends and I spent a lot of time feeling better than everyone else and kind of judging all the tourists in a way. So when we were in, you know, like junior high, we used to walk around Times Square whenever we would have to go down there, and there'd be all these tourists there. And my friend came up with this joke where we would walk around with a southern accent and we'd be staring up at the tops of the buildings. Gosh, these buildings are so tall. Tallest building in my town's a church. So that was part of it. And then when I came to One Taste, we did some shadow work, and in this one course, we had to go to a party as a part of our shadow. And I got the name from another girl in the course who had a southern cousin from Georgia named Macy.
Hi, my name's Macy. I'm from Georgia. I come from a big family. I am the oldest of 6, and then there's my mom and my daddy. And we live in a big old house down in Georgia, and
Like, was there any new part that you found in there? Any part of yourself that you discovered that you didn't know?
Growing up, I was like, I don't believe in love. I don't believe in marriage. I never want to get married. So then I have Macy, this character who's like all about family and marriage. Yeah, I remember the first time I saw him, I thought to myself, that man is going to be my husband. And then we dated for a while. And then after I got pregnant, we got married.
So if you could thank Macy for whatever, what would you thank her for?
Part of it is this pressure that comes off to be like very intellectual and witty and intelligent. So I would thank her for just giving me a venue to like let loose and relax and like have fun and not have to put anything on. It's like in a way like going back to the basics of myself, and just for that opportunity to just be more free. And you know, when I'm her and when I'm in her accent, it's like different thoughts come up and different stories, and like it's just a whole different mental framework. So it's like I can't plan out what I'm gonna say, I can't think ahead, I just kind of have to go in the moment. So it's nice to not have like my entire personality and history to reference when I'm speaking. It's like I'm just this other person, and it kind of comes naturally and organically.
Anything else you want to add?
No, I think I'm done.
Thanks, Allegra, and thanks, Macy.
Bye, y'all.
You've been listening to A Taste of Sex. We'll be back after this short break.
Listen to A Taste of Sex, erotic poetry reading, a companion program to Life in an Orgasm-Based Community. It's open mic night at One Taste San Francisco, a weekly audio program on personallifemedia.com.
Welcome back to A Taste of Sex. I'm Judy Silber. This is Ken playing Billy Bob, the truck driver.
Well, my name's Billy Bob, and what I do is I drive down the road, and, you know, every time I see pretty ladies, I just think, I'm going to get some of that.
How is it for you to be driving all the time? Does that get tiring?
Well, it's tiring, but I get to see a lot of life.
Ken, when and where did this character arise?
This character arose. I think I was still in the Marine Corps, and I was watching David Letterman. And he had this character he did, Bill, he's a meat packer. I thought it was funny. I thought it was hilarious. And I kind of had known people like that, with that kind of voice. So I was goofing around with a friend on a motorcycle ride, and I just said, hey, you know, there's Billy Bob. Because we were driving in between Yuma, Arizona and San Diego, and there's a lot of trucks pass. And I, look at there, there's Billy Bob. Hey, Billy Bob. And I raised my hand for and he honked the horn. And I was like, and we were cracking up. So for a while, that was kind of a character I played with that guy.
But here at One Taste, you brought out that character a lot.
Yeah, it became, I don't know how it became ingrained in me, but it's sort of, it was that inappropriate sexual innuendo guy.
Yeah, like what kind of innuendos? What do you think?
Well, without actually saying anything, like, hey, how you doing there? And there's just the energy behind it when I say that, like, I want to grab your tits. that's kind of,
I don't want to grab your ass and then, just grab you. Rub my hands all over you.
I think I recognize that.
Yeah, there you go. See? Yeah, so there's that energy behind it. That energy gets to come out without, like, I don't feel self-conscious about it.
Like when you look at a 16-wheeler and you see the wheels and how beautifully built it is, it's the curves. I like the curves.
So what side of your shadow does this represent?
I think the aggressive sexual predator, that's part of me.
How are you usually?
I'm usually shy, and I do this little boy thing, which I know doesn't work anymore. It's not very interesting. But I think I pretend to be not quite equipped to handle women.
So then Billy Bob embodied...
It embodied more of that feeling of, like, I can feel my muscles in my body and just, like, a big belly and kind of this assertive, aggressive arrogance. But not this oppressive arrogance, just this more of this, like, fun. I'm gonna get you. You're going to have fun with me.
So he's a way to laugh at this part of yourself that usually you're pushing down.
Yeah, it's just a fun way to address my sexual nature.
Is that a side of you that you're scared of?
I wouldn't so much I'm afraid, as I'm uncomfortable with expressing it. And I guess what it is that perhaps the aftermath or the consequences of allowing that behavior to be expressed is a little scary. So will I get slapped, or will people not talk to me again? Will a woman... You know, will I be completely rejected in that? Actually, I haven't been rejected in that. You know, a few different women have said, oh, I'm tired of that one.
But I get the feeling that it allowed you to experiment with a side of yourself that you were otherwise would rather have just pushed away.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely gave me a way to express that sort of aggressive, like construction worker kind of way that men come at women. That's just instinctive. Like, you see a woman you're attracted to, and you have this, like, urge, you have, or at least I do, I've had, there's just this feeling that runs through the body of attraction and sexual tension is created and this desire. And so that character is definitely for me a way for me to address that directly with any particular woman I'm attracted to, but in a way that they can feel me, but I don't have to be explicit.
Would you say that you started relying on the character too much?
Yeah, I think for the few people who said, okay, we're tired of this one, it then became a place to hide. Because I think when I did it in in-group, at a certain point, it was...
So in-group, again, is this Wednesday night event that we have here at One Taste, and I can attest. Almost every in-group that Ken attended, during a certain round of questions that would happen, he would become trucker guy at some point.
Yeah, and it's usually more going for the laugh rather than any kind of vulnerability. And I started noticing how that there was a way I would hide the vulnerability in that character.
Have you thought about how to integrate Billy Bob's characteristics without being Billy Bob himself? And do you think that he actually helped you get to the point where you could do that?
Yeah, definitely that character helped me get to a point where I could sort of relax and just sort of be me. I think when I'm being me, there's a sort of smoother way I do it, kind of come up next to somebody and grabbing them by the hips and saying, hey, how you doing? Or something like that, in a more real way or more authentic way to who I am.
But even just the way you said that, hey, how are you? It didn't feel shy. It actually felt like you're putting yourself out there.
Yeah.
Do you have a character that's emerging now, like a next Ken, or a next pseudo Ken, or a next shadow Ken, whatever you want to call it?
Probably the angry Ken, but with humor. One of my favorite comedians was a guy named Bill Hicks, who would get on stage and he would just tear people a new asshole. In terms of being, some comedians are angry, and they tend to be favorites by and large. Like George Carlin was pretty angry in his humor, but there was something about it. There was a truth that he spoke that took the edge off the humor. And that's kind of, I feel like that's an essence of me that's coming out, to just say the truth no matter how uncomfortable it is and just do it with humor in that way.
So what's a truth that you would say with anger and humor?
Just a broad truth.
Anything. It could be to me. It could be to anything.
Okay. So we're in a current, so-called financial crisis, and there's a new election coming up. And there's all of this turmoil. And what I want to say to everyone in general is wake the fuck up. Okay? Just wake the fuck up. This shit has been knocking on our door for the last 20 years. This is bullshit. Wake the fuck up.
Thanks, Ken.
You're welcome. How you doing?
Finally, we have Beth, who for a while made role-playing a full-time hobby. Where are you from, Margaret?
Oh, honey, I'm from Virginia.
And you have a large family?
Well, it depends on what you call large, honey. How large is your family?
Oh, we're pretty small. Just very small.
Now, honey, didn't you want to have kids and make that small family larger?
I'm the one doing the interview, Margaret.
Oh, excuse me. I didn't mean to offend you. Please, what would you like to know, darling? I'm an open book, honey. You ask me whatever you want. I'm glad to share with you. My entire life is available to you.
What do you...
How's that young man situation working out here, honey?
Margaret is the quintessential hostess, and she is the ultimate matriarch. She's the one that keeps it all together and very rarely complains about it.
So Margaret is an actual person in your family?
Kind of, yes. She's kind of based on my grandmother. Not exactly, but that idea of the matriarch, who my grandmother was a good early example of.
And how did she come out of you?
It was during the taboo retreat that we did over Halloween weekend. And I usually don't do anything for Halloween. Because I could never find the perfect costume, I never did anything. I just stayed at home. But I really wanted to do something to be part of the retreat. And I was actually shopping for a costume at a thrift store, and I didn't know what I was going to do. And I saw this pink nightgown with lace, and it reminded me of her. And as soon as I saw it, I knew I was going to do her.
What is it? What are the characters that came out of being Margaret that were different from yourself, from the normal repertoire of either emotions or characteristics that you usually display?
I was really nervous to play her because I wasn't used to putting out that much love or that much appreciation. And because I have a hard time accepting love, I thought people were going to get uncomfortable like I do. And they didn't at all. People that I had lived with for over a year, my relationship with them entirely changed that night that I was playing Margaret.
William, can you introduce yourself?
I'd be glad to, for you anything. I'm someone who's here to make your day much better. Would you like to come sit on my knee?
William, who is he?
He's a family member who has always been one of my favorite family members, and he's quite controversial, and I've actually I've liked that about him for most of the time, and is really just like entertaining, really huge energy, like someone who can just, you know, easily hold the room of 50 people, and he's got this booming voice, and he knows everything there is to know about fixing anything, and just a really, like, handy guy with a super salty sense of humor.
So that, in some ways, that matches your outgoing personality. Well, I'm just wondering, it sounds to me that he had this larger-than-life personality. And So then, for you to step into that, I imagine that must have helped in some way have you know this side of your personality even better.
Yeah, it did. It gave me a lot of permission. I felt freedom. And the thing that I owe most to playing the William character was that was the first time that I overtly flirted with women. So to step into a male character and to do what he would have done, I mean, he's constantly telling women that they're beautiful, they're so pretty, they're so cute, and I'm scared that if women know I'm attracted to them, they'll just kind of recoil or feel like I'm not good enough for them or something like that. Seeing their positive response to William, even the women that I thought wouldn't have looked at me twice, I went out on an edge and flirted with them that night, and they loved it. They weren't offended. They weren't pushing me away. They actually came closer, and that was a real revelation.
Anna May.
Hi, Judy!
Hi.
Hi, Judy, I love you!
How old are you, Anna
Judy,
May?
Judy, I'm 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Anna May. So she's a 6-year-old.
Yeah. And she just has endless energy, and she's totally sweet. And she's a lot for people to take in sometimes. Like, people actually probably got the most uncomfortable with that character. Just,
why do you think that is?
I really don't know. I mean, it could be that that's a character inside ourselves that we're most likely to shut down because it seems like they need protecting.
Or attention.
A little neediness, yeah. But she really, she just wants someone to even, like, be a body there as she's talking. It doesn't have to be concentrated attention, you know? So it actually doesn't have to be tiring for the other person. That was something I learned by playing her. Sometimes a terminal is just a live body and they don't have to do anything. So that's helped me when I'm the listener for people. I used to work really hard to try to say the right thing, or I'd be holding my breath until it seemed like the time to interject or give an idea or something like that. And now, because of anime, there are people that I can just listen to and occasionally say, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I can tell that that's enough for them. And it's all right for me, too. It's more peaceful than trying to find solutions for them or something that, you know, I can't do.
I imagine she must have also helped you find a certain sense of freedom in that little girls, little boys, children, they don't think before acting. They generally just act.
That's a really good insight. I did used to heavily edit everything I said before it came out. Playing her, there's no way that a little kid feels like there's going to be anything wrong. She just has this, you know, ceaseless curiosity, and that felt really good to tap back into that part of me, too.
So there's one more character in your repertoire. She doesn't really have a voice, but her name is Roller Derby Girl.
Yes, Trixie.
So Trixie skates.
So it's early 80s, and she definitely wears leg warmers, and she definitely wears pink frosty lipstick and blue eyeshadow, and has a side ponytail. And she's convinced that any day now she's going to get a better job, but she puts all of her extra time into roller derby. She's practicing at night. She's practicing in her neighborhood. She still lives in her parents' basement. She lives for matches on the weekends, and she doesn't quite ever make it on the rink when there are matches. She's not quite good enough yet, but she's convinced that any day now she's going to be.
What did bringing Roller Derby Girl out, what did that do for you?
Well, I got to run into people and have an excuse.
Literally, on skates, yeah. Yes. I got slammed a few times.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun to feel in motion. And I had this total sense of freedom that I was like gliding and all the stuff inside of me was getting cleared out. And I liked the feeling that if I didn't like what someone was saying, I could just skate away. Like, I'm kind of a people pleaser when I'm not Trixie. And she's not hung up on that because she just lives to skate.
So I'm curious about the evolution of these characters in that you went through a phase, or in my observation, it seems like you went through a phase where all of these characters were coming out, and they were coming out one by one by one. And, you know, for a time, we never knew who Beth was going to be on any given day, and which was fun. It was something that I'll just tell you that I actually admired a lot.
Thank you.
Because I could see the freedom that was in it. What I'm wondering about is, was there a spark that brought out, that just started to bring them forth?
The spark was that Taboo retreat weekend. A few of us decided to just take that retreat as students.
Usually there's a group of us who are holding the courses as opposed to taking them.
Right. When I took it, being able to play and being encouraged to play and hearing the different teachers basically say, this is your homework assignment. I'm such a good girl that I'm like, okay, I'll do it. And then it felt so good that it just kept happening and I didn't want to shut it down. I can't remember when that time period stopped, but I know that it was starting to have me feel more distant than people rather than less. I think because I lost that tether of, like, who's the essence of Beth no matter what character is coming out.
In retrospect, do you feel like you were able to bring out these characteristics which had obviously been inside of you but were perhaps a little more hidden or sheltered or veiled in some way, and then to reintegrate them into Beth?
Definitely. I'm a person who likes proof. I needed some evidence that it was going to be okay if I flirted with women, that it was going to be okay if I just poured love onto people. Welcome. I'm so glad you're here. Hey, how's it going? It's definitely every day a part of me. I had to see that most people weren't going to shy away from it. People seem to love it when I just tell the truth. Then they're not trying to figure out, like, oh, Beth's mad about something, but she won't just say it. So I feel like in that way, these characters were not only my road to feeling more free, but it also helped me strengthen that muscle of listening to my instinct. They really were instinctive hits that in the moment I just said, okay, I'll go with it. The hits didn't even have words. I just got a flash of a feeling and an image. And then it just was inside of me and I just let it out.
Thanks, Beth.
Thank you, Judy.
Thank you for listening to A Taste of Sex. For transcripts of this show, go to personallifemedia.com. For more information about One Taste, our lectures, workshops, and other events, you can find us on the web at onetaste.us. If you'd like to email me, I'm going to give a different address than I have in the past. You can email me at judysilber@gmail.com. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back, and I promise it won't be as long as it was the last time. I'm Judy Silber.
I like to talk about everything. I like to talk about my family. I like to talk about stories I heard in church. I like to go out with my friends. I like to talk about, you know, boys and all the boys that I used to date. And I don't know what it's like to be in a place where the tallest building around is the church. Like, I'm not that. So the really interesting piece is, like, being that.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.